so close for the U.S. on so many occasions. Now moving up on the inside. Into second place.
They're all completely gassed. They've given it everything on the global bucket. It's Steena Nielsen leading Jesse Diggins into the final turn. Can Diggins answer?
As the roars rattle around the cross-country stadium in Pyeongchang, Sweden, the U.S., and Norway coming to the line.
Here comes Diggins!
On the outside, Diggins making the play around Sweden. Jesse Diggins to the line.
Yes!
And it is Jesse Diggins delivering a landmark moment that will be etched in U.S. Olympic history. The first ever cross-country gold medal for the U.S.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 94 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter, at BreakBallsPod, or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. We're back after a little bit of a hiatus, and I am sorry to say that not much has changed since our last episode 2 weeks ago. We have another meeting coming up on Saturday. We have an announcement from the commissioner tomorrow on Thursday. So that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week. No, just kidding. Just kidding. We're staying.
I don't even get to talk in this episode. Jesus.
I basically just said it all, but we're going to pontificate for the next 40 minutes.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I have nothing to say. I just wanted the opportunity to decline it.
The owners met for their quarterly meeting, which I didn't even know that they have, but I guess that makes sense, in Florida this week. And the players also met in Arizona with the Players Association.
I was going to now, isn't that a little indicative, like, the owners are going down to partying in Miami and the players, we're going to meet up in the desert. We'll see you there.
I thought it was kind of weird because I may be making this up, but I'm pretty sure I read that it was like in Orlando, and it's like these billionaires can't go to a better place in Florida than Orlando. No offense to any Orlando residents.
It is in Orlando. No, it is in Orlando because I saw the bad jokes about them like doing it over like Mickey waffles at Walt Disney World.
I'm not expecting anything to really come out of that announcement tomorrow. I mean, besides announcing that spring training is probably canceled or postponed, which we all knew was coming since the pitchers and catchers are supposed to report in like 6 days. So it's like, yeah, no shit, it's canceled. We know.
Right. And it's also, I mean, we're not going to go into it because, you know, it's old news at this point. But especially after what happened last week with MLB just straight up went back on their promise to have a counteroffer. And then on top of that, they go ahead and they're like, oh, well, we need federal mediation now. And the league's, well, no, which is their right. So they just dug their heels in, MLB did, on just negotiating in bad faith. All of this is coming from that place. So anybody, I've seen a couple people who it's delusional, like, well, maybe it'll be good news on Thursday. It's not going to be good news on Thursday. We are 100% getting delayed at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the league has been doing nothing but dragging its feet the entire process. The best part was when, you know, in December, when they decided to lock out the players, how they made it, they tried to frame it like as if they had no choice. They literally used those words. We had no choice but to do
a defensive lockout, right?
Yeah, defensive lockout, whatever the fuck that means. And they haven't done shit. They've only met 4 times for collective bargaining with the Players Association since December 2nd. And they've offered nothing. They've done no concessions. The players have conceded a few things. The players are trying to negotiate in good faith. They're not asking for much here, but the owners are not countering. They are not conceding anything. They are just sitting there with their arms crossed, and they're hoping that the media and the fans are able to do all the legwork for them and force the players into folding, which I don't see that happening.
No, I think you're 100% right about that. And I mean, rather than rehash the whole thing, because who has the time? I strongly recommend reading the article that Disha Thosar from the Daily News put out. It's not anything groundbreaking in terms of like new information, but it's a really good summary of where we're at right now. And she doesn't pull any punches about whose fault this is, who's right, who's wrong here. it's one of the most concise things I've read about it. So to all of our listeners, I would really go read that rather than me trying to paraphrase it.
What's really weird about this whole situation, well, not the only thing, but, well, maybe weird isn't the word, interesting. It's interesting how silence on the owner's part has given, like, the fans this idea that the players are in the driver's seat. Like, because the owners aren't doing or saying anything, it implies that the front-facing people in this situation, the players, that, like, they can decide. It's up to them to do this without the context of, well, yeah, I guess they could agree to have the same or worse deal than they had leaving the last collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, it's depressing the extent to which the MLB propaganda is working. You know, like you look on the social media landscape and even people I talk to in person, and more often than not, the sentiment is that, oh, it's both sides. You know, people buy into it's millionaires arguing with billionaires, as if there's not a wide chasm between those two groups to begin with.
Like a billion.
Like, yeah, basically an entire billion is the difference between a billion and a million if you're rounding. No, but seriously, and I mean, you know, I guess it shouldn't be surprising because, again, you know, these guys are billionaires. You get $1 billion by being cold and calculating and being an asshole in negotiations and taking advantage of every situation that's put before you. So it's equally depressing that none of this is surprising. You know what I mean? It's par for the course, and it just makes it that much more frustrating on our end when, like, it's so clear if you're paying attention who's at fault here. But, you know, you don't get to that level of wealth and influence without having a good PR team, too. And they're on top of it, and it's working. Like, you know, the everyday fan really thinks it's both sides' fault, and, you know, why can't we all just get along? And it's bad. It's bad, and it's working.
And the only fault that I can possibly place on the shoulders of the Players Association is that it may not have gotten this bad if they didn't roll over for the owners in the past few CBAs. So that's it. That's really their fault. But beyond that, this isn't their fault, because what were they going to do? Look at all the pressure that's on them. So you can understand how in times past, how it can just be easier to be like, you know what, let's just concede this, concede that, let's play ball. Where now they're at a point where, okay, if we concede anything more, this union is a fucking sham because the players aren't actually being protected or their interests being protected by anything.
I'm kind of torn too, because, like, we had said going into this that maybe this would be different because it is the first lockout or anything resembling it in our current, not just the social media age, but, like, how deep into the social media age we are. You know, we're like, this is one of our main modes of communication now. So the players, to a certain extent, are taking advantage of that. And, you know, if you have the right follows and you're in the right groups, you're getting the inside track. But I'll be honest, I'm a little disappointed that I feel like it's not having the reach and the effect that it should. Because, again, that you know, like I said, the propaganda from MLB is very clearly working. And I really was kind of optimistic going into this. Like, oh, maybe this will be different because we're going to hear the player's side. But you're only really getting that if you're searching it out. You know what I mean? It's still not, you know, it's for you to find. It's not being put out there, which, again, is all by design. Let's be real.
And MLB is really making no secret that they're trying to take advantage of all these new avenues to reach fans and to taint the water, so to speak. This past week, a writer for the New York Times, his name is Michael S. Schmidt. He is a Washington correspondent for the New York Times, and he has been a Washington correspondent for the New York Times for at least a decade. Now, the reason I bring this up on a baseball show is
that we shouldn't care about his baseball opinion. Sorry, you keep going.
Pretty much. He was on MSNBC this week on some daytime talking head show that they have. And they were talking about probably,
I think it was Morning Joe.
Yeah, Morning Joe. That's sure. That is what it was. And they were talking, I'm sure, about fucking politics, money, whatever. Then in the most obvious and awkward way, the host, who I assume is named Joe, he's like, Michael, so the MLB, you know, they're having the lockout. You used to work with, you know, baseball. Like, what do you have to say about this? Like, just literally threw him a softball on a fucking political talk show about baseball, where then this guy, Michael S. Schmidt, was like, oh, you know, the league and, you know, Manfred all the way down to their negotiators, they feel that Tony Clark and Bruce Meyer have been neutered and that they are actually negotiating with dun 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 the boogeyman Scott Boris. That he basically said that something illegal is going on. The union is having an agent represent them in these negotiations. And that's a very serious accusation, and one that he didn't say, he didn't give any sources for. He was just like, I still know people in the biz. And it's like, oh, okay, I guess we should just trust you then.
Well, I mean, and I think if you're going to Morning Joe for your baseball news, like, that guy is as close to an expert as you're going to get. Like, oh, 10 years ago, you were a baseball reporter? You must be in the inside of all this, right?
And so I wanted to find out the capacity that he worked in baseball, because I'd never heard of him before. So I, you know, Googled him, whatever. I found a book that he wrote. I read the bio on the book, and it's like, oh, he used to work in the sports desk at New York Times. So then I Google his name, and it said that he worked with, like, performance-enhancing drugs or whatever. I Google his name with performance-enhancing drugs. He's the fucking guy that got handed the leaked results of that 2003 anonymous test. He's the one who outed David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez in the New York Times. He was like 23 or 25 at the time and a nobody. So basically, this guy was given these results from, who knows, MLB? I think so. And now this is like still trying to repay that debt, because it's like, hey, buddy, we made you somebody with that story. Now we need you to go on the show and inexplicably talk about baseball in the middle of a politics show.
I mean, it's as relevant as he's been in, checks notes, 10 years, so I guess he jumped all over that shit.
And can we finally just stop making Scott Boris out to be like, he is just like this evil devil that is ruining the game? Like, what the fuck is that about? How does he even get brought into this? Like, of all people, Scott Boris?
Well, you know what? Like, the whole thing, Schmidt worded it very careful, or rather, the words that Schmidt were handed.
Yeah,
if we're right about
the
this.
Copy.
It, right, the copy. They're very good. The copy was worded very carefully. In that, if you want to get technical, I think he could argue that he didn't say it was actually Scott Boris. It was that, you know, we might as well be negotiating with Scott Boris. It's like, it's all technicalities. It's all semantics. And at the end of the day, it's again propaganda. We still like Sesame Street. Today's word is propaganda.
And I did notice, because I listened to the clip a little bit before we started recording for a second or third time, and they didn't really say MLB at any point. They kept on just referring to it as baseball. And I know that may sound semantical, but language matters in situations like this. And there's a reason that they weren't saying MLB when they were talking about what's going on with a negative connotation, because they don't want to associate the owners with the bad stuff. They want to associate just the sport in general, because when you put it all under the same tent, then it becomes both sides.
And I'm glad you did that research, Em, because, I mean, it comes down to, just like with everything else, know who your source is. Know who's saying it. Know who's pulling their strings, if anybody. Like, you can't take stuff at face value. You just can't.
And apparently, I found out also tonight, my research, that he broke the story, Michael S. Schmidt, that is, broke the story a few years ago when Scott Boris was found to have been, you know, giving loans to young players. And it was, you know, he got in trouble because it was going to mess with, like, the integrity of the sport or something like that, where it's probably on some, these guys are poor, they're coming from a poor country, and the pay structure in this fucking league is such that they don't make money for a decade. So Maybe this guy's like, here's some money. You're going to make money in a few years. Just here's a loan to, you know, so you could buy a fucking place to live since you're moving to a different country. But what do I know? I don't know the details to that one. Not yet, anyway.
Give it time.
So this week on the timeline on Twitter, and yes, I know we're talking about the timeline on Twitter, but hey, we're in a lockout. There was a tweet. I mean,
we got 15 minutes of crappy baseball news, so, you know, we can move on from here.
There was a tweet. There's an account on Twitter. His name is Coach Lyle, and he's, you know, like a hitting instructor or something. He's got a check mark, a lot of followers, not a rando account. He posts a video of a man hitting in a cage. And his caption that he posted with it, he was being facetious, and he said, oh, my friend's son needs some hitting tips. Anyone have any? Because the person in the video actually was Mike Trout. And someone in the replies literally was like, oh, well, you know, that's a pitching machine swing. It's great when you're 8, and it's not going to be good when you get older. You can't hit any velocity. Tell him that balance is key. And then someone was like, are you for real? And he was like, yes. And then went on another three sentences about how you can fix Mike Trout's swing. So someone said, you realize that that's Mike Trout, right? And he was like, no, I did not.
That was just one of those moments when the internet just comes together in a beautiful and hysterical, perfect way. And that was exactly that. Like, oh, my God. You know what it reminded me of? Jerry Blevins, former Met reliever.
Oh, yeah.
He has a great podcast with, I forget who it is, but he does this podcast. And
Olive.
Right. John Boy, Jay Olive. Yep, sorry about that. But yes, that's who it is. And he had tweeted something about, I think it was during that, we had that weekend of awesome football games during the playoffs. And Jerry Blevins tweets something like, I'm reminded why I don't like watching sporting events in large groups, because everybody thinks that they know what strategy these professionals should be putting forth. It's like, you have no idea. You have no idea.
It is one of my biggest pet peeves. And anytime I see it on Twitter, on Facebook, or hear it, what the fuck do people on Twitter think that they know? They're watching these guys swing on TV and they're like, oh, you know, he really should... He should have a little bit higher or low. And it's like, what the fuck do you know? Who are you? And what do you know to correct and suggest to a professional athlete? I mean, in this case specifically, this fucking poor son of a bitch didn't know that he was a professional athlete.
Right.
But in the cases where it is, I've seen people post videos from actual games being like, oh, so-and-so should just do this with his hands, blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't know shit about hitting at pro levels.
My absolute favorite in that genre of replies is when it's an older dude and he goes with the, I've been watching the game longer than you played it or longer than you've been alive. It's like as if that's at all equivalent, like even remotely.
I always get the line, I've forgotten more baseball than you know. Like, what the fuck does that mean, old man?
Speaking of old men, yeah, you set me up with that one. That was beautiful.
Perfect.
All right, speaking of old men. We had mentioned on the pod a couple weeks back when Keith Hernandez was announced to be having his Mets jersey retired, he kind of inadvertently leaked that the Mets were looking into doing an Old Timers Day. And that was confirmed this week. So they are going to do the Old Timers Day. We were actually mistaken, Em. You know, now that Max is no longer our resident stats guru, we got to do it ourselves. Sorry.
And we don't. I'm like, wait, what would I have made a mistake
And we
about?
Don't, but this time I will. So we had said, like, it sounds like something the Mets never would have done. As it turns out, it was actually an OG Mets thing, was to do Old Timers Day. Yeah, well, think about it. Because they came from, you know, the remnants of the Giants and the Dodgers, they got a bunch of old Dodgers and Giants for the first ever Mets Old Timers Day, which is kind of quietly brilliant. Get butts in the seats. Oh, I almost said chair. I guess it would probably be polo grounds back then. But anyway, yeah, so then they kept doing it until the 90s. I think it was 94 was the last one. So they're bringing it back. Some of the names in there are really cool. They got, like, you know, Frank Thomas is coming back and Mike Piazza says he's coming. And then, and I literally posted this gif of from Saving Private Ryan at the end when Matt Damon just ages all at once in like 2 seconds. Because then the next line I read was, and also featuring in Old Timers Day, Daniel Murphy.
That's fucked up.
And I'm looking, I'm like, isn't Murphy like... less than a decade older than me? He's got to be, right? Like,
let's see.
Like, oh, man.
I'm going to look this up right now while we're talking.
God.
Daniel Murphy, because I feel like
we should be doing this on video, because now I'm going to age in real time.
Oh, my God, dude. His birthday is April 1st, 1985. He's literally...
No! He's 3 years... Oh, my God.
He is... at least 3 years older than you. April 1st, 1985 is exactly... 373 days older than I am. So I'm old timers now. This makes it official. Daniel Murphy, how fucking dare you, sir?
Wait, so if you're playing an old timers day, you're going to get me in the clubhouse, right?
Yes,
I misunderstood that whole section.
And speaking of misunderstanding, when I saw Frank Thomas was going, I was like, Frank Thomas? I didn't know he played for the Mets. So I Googled it. It's fucking some 97-year-old or whatever that played in like the 60s.
And oh, wait, really?
Like,
oh,
yes, it's an old white Frank Thomas.
I'm thinking like Frank Thomas is going to be in the Mets locker room hawking ED pills. You know,
it's Nugenics.
We all get old.
Nugenics is doing fucking ED now. He's like, we're doing diets and erectile dysfunction.
Oh, it's not new. That's what it's always, because they have those Nugenics commercials like, oh, you feel younger.
They help you feel stronger, leaner, with more energy and drive.
Here, try a bottle. And trust me,
She'll like it too.
And the wife won't mind it either. It's like, okay, we know what you're saying, buddy.
One thing that kind of annoyed me, and it's just classic, you know, Yankee Mets shit, but there are Yankees fans who are like, why are the Mets doing an Old Timers Day?
Oh,
it's so like they're on the Yankees. They just want to be the Yankees. It's whatever. And it's like, why? What do you mean want to be the Yankees? The Yankees are the only team that can do an Old Timers Day? Like, this league is old as fuck. The Mets have been around for 60 years. They shouldn't and can't do an Old Timers Day. Anything the Yankees do, then everyone's just trying to copy.
Yeah, because Yankees fans are gatekeepers. And they're like, oh, well, you don't have the history that we do, so you call that an Old Timers Day? Frank Thomas is only 97? We got dead guys in the outfield.
And there are always guys at Old Timers Day, because the reality is, what sucks about the Yankees having so much success, and I know that sounds stupid.
Where are you going with that one?
What sucks about it in terms of just the Old Timers Day is that really good teams and championship teams, they give birth to a lot of stars. Mm. So a lot of star players, they don't necessarily come back for stuff like that. So sometimes they do. You'll get a Mariano Rivera or whatever. But like in general, you're not getting Derek Jeter every year at the Old Timers Day. You're not getting these guys. So you go and it's guys that you never fucking heard of because they were on the team when they weren't good in like the 90s or when they were just like a bench guy that I don't remember because I was fucking 12 years old in 1998. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean because I was 10. And I want to see Derek Jeter like begrudgingly participate in an Old Timers Day, but he insists on wearing a Marlins uniform to do it.
He throws a fucking hissy fit about not playing shortstop. We have a huge update here at Breaking Balls headquarters. This is tremendous, huge. Turns out, I actually do like the Winter Olympics.
This just in, former athlete enjoys competition. Details at 11.
Well, I guess maybe in the past when it's been the Winter Olympics, I probably had more things going on to like focus on. So I was like, I don't really like this. Where now there's nothing happening. So I'm like, I guess I might as well watch this. And I'm like, wow, turns out I actually do enjoy watching these Olympics.
Yeah, Emily literally texted me like a mea culpa. Because remember on the pod, we had talked about it. She was like, you know, I'm not really into it. Like, yeah, I guess I'll do it for the pod because there's nothing else. And she texted me like, okay, yeah, so I forgot. This is like pure distilled competition and I love it. I'm like, I knew it. I fucking knew it.
Because there's something interesting about the Winter Olympics that like, there are no,
yes,
with the
it's
exception
called curling.
Yeah. Well, with the exception of curling, there's no, like, get this object, the ball, get in the opposite net, or hockey too. So besides those things, they don't have that, where in the summer you have a lot of team sports and you have a lot of different objectives like that. Whereas this is just either race your opponents straight up, or you are racing the clock and trying to get a time, or you're doing fucking crazy flips in the air. Like, I kind of like that that's what it is, and it's pretty bare bones to me as far as competition is concerned. Nothing fancy.
No, I agree with you, and it's interesting because the commentators, they almost sometimes seem like apologetic for it. Like some of these individual ones, like, we know the scoring is difficult to understand. It's like, is it though? Is it harder to understand than like European handball in the Summer Olympics, where they're calling these fouls and doing penalty shots? Like, what the fuck is going on?
I mean, is it any easier to understand than the infield fly rule? Like, there's so many confusing things about American sports that make no sense. And something that I gave the mea culpa to John, I also owe Michael Kay and company a pretty big apology. So as anyone listening is aware, I usually have a few bones to pick with Michael Kay and the broadcast. And same with John Sterling. I complain about dead air. I complain about all that type of shit in a baseball broadcast. Turns out, it's because I had nothing to compare it to for all of these years. No other sporting event lasts as long and is just like the same thing for 3 hours. Well, in the Winter Olympics, some of the qualifying rounds would take 3 hours. DJ Bingington and I were watching one of the big air qualifiers, and it literally lasted for 2.5-3 hours. The commentator didn't stop talking the entire time, and I am not exaggerating when I say that. He didn't come up for air, and I couldn't fucking stand it. And then I had the revelation, like, holy shit. This is why guys like Michael Kay and company, why they pause. They don't talk for literally the entire time. Because the alternative is so bad that I would zone out. And when I would zone back in, I couldn't believe that he was still talking.
it's probably like 4 years of like pent up commentary. Like, I'm being paid money to talk. I got to talk. I'm not going to get to do this again until 2026.
He's like, I have all of these comments on last Olympics that I didn't get a chance to say. So he's just talking about Pyeongchang.
Just got a backlog with him.
And the Winter Olympics are really awesome because it's like only 7 different sports and then a couple different disciplines and then like 100 events. Like, it's a really small, seems like a truncated version in terms of like the Olympics, because the Summer Olympics have over 300 events.
You know what the Winter Olympics are like? And roll with me on this. No pun intended in advance. It's like Taco Bell, right? Think about it. Because Taco Bell, at the end of the day, there's what? Like 7 ingredients. There's like meat, cheese, tomatoes, lettuce, a couple sauces, onions, maybe, you know?
Different disciplines and, onions, right. So
like,
and cheese.
You know, it's like, okay, so we got like, okay, this is skiing. Well, what if we do the nacho, beefy, onion, jalapeno, supreme skiing on a giant jump? And that's all it is. It's just mix and match.
Because of how similar but different all of the sports are, DJ Bingington and I had a who's on first moment the other night because we were trying to watch one of the skiings, but there was alpine skiing, downhill skiing, freestyle skiing. So I was saying like downhill skiing and he was talking about alpine skiing, but we were both like saying the same words. Like, no, the skiing's on this channel and the other skiing is on this channel. It fucking took us 20 minutes and I'm still not sure that we actually ended up on the thing we wanted to watch.
Well, I'm at the point now, I don't know if you've gotten to this yet, where like you get into repeats. Cause like there's only so many events and like they start and I'm like, I'm watching it. And like, you know, like sometimes it's like on, you know, in the background, you're like, you're on your phone and stuff and you're watching in and out. And then I'll see like a guy like 3 hours later. I'm like, I saw that exact celebration after that jump. Oh my God. It's come full circle.
You don't even realize.
I'm out of new Olympic material for the day.
Speaking of out of new material. Episodes 6 and 7 of The Book of Boba Fett have come and gone. Turns out episode 7 was the finale. I didn't realize it was going to only be 7 episodes. And in comparison to the first 5 episodes, episodes 6 and 7 were fucking amazing.
It brought it together in a big way, yeah.
They brought the Mandalorian in here. We got to see Grogu. We got to see some Jedi shit on whatever planet Grogu was on with Luke. And the building of the future, like, Jedi school that we know Kylo Ren destroys later on.
R2-D2 ant bot things, whatever that was.
Oh, those things were fucking creepy. They were, like, right? Weird. Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, they're spiders. Oh, wait, they only have 6 legs. That's okay, then. They still gave me the creeps. I mean, this series was just, like, so unnecessary, and it felt like the writers knew it. Like, it was just such like a mailed-in series, in my opinion. I still don't understand why Boba Fett cares so much about Tatooine and any of that. He's not from there. Like, why? These are my people.
It almost feels like this was like a pitched idea for the 3rd season of The Mandalorian. But they're like, well, there's not enough Mando in it. He's not in the first 4 episodes. So we got to make a whole different show about it. And to add to your point, like, not only are these like not his people, he literally took over for a crime lord. Like, at what point is this? And I made this complaint already, so I'm not going to lean into it. But the whole, like, you know, I'm a bad guy. I'm collecting protection money. I'm trying to improve my community. I'm working with these youths now, and now I'm protecting all these people. Like, what? So you can go back to being a crime lord? Like, are you doing them a favor?
It was really strange. And just the 50s bikes were back. And, like, it's just such an odd aesthetic. It does not fit in Tatooine. Like, to have those weird bikes and the weird teens with like the modded, like, it just was so out of place.
I have to correct you there, because they were based on 60s scooters and it was super lame, because like that was whole, like, the scene was called the mod scene in the 60s. And what did they call them in the show? The mods. You have a whole writing room that you're paying. Like, are you fucking serious? I'll tell you what though, I did especially like episode 6. And one thing that I want to point out, just briefly, one of the complaints I had made was like that they were, you know, Star Wars has always been based, you know, as a space Western. I felt like early on in the season, it wasn't completely committed to that. And it felt like they were telling their story and then just like, oh, here's a sudden Western trope. But it wasn't like a full Western story, you know? This finally felt like, especially, I mean, Timothy Oliphant is a cowboy. It just works great, you know? So it was just straight up, you know, the whole, gun showdown in the deserted town. Like, it went all the way. And that was my whole thing. It's like, if you're going to do the Western thing, do the Western thing. And even to the point where, like, I didn't mind the ridiculousness of, you know, the mysterious stranger, like, showing up. And he's got the flat-brimmed hat, like he's Clint Eastwood or something. And it's like, not for nothing. Where else in the Star Wars universe have you seen anything even remotely resembling that? But because they committed to it, I'm in. It's cool. Visually, it was cool. I loved the juxtaposition between having, you know, finally committing to the Western, but then you go to see Luke and Grogu, and it's a full-on kung fu samurai training movie, you know, going through the bamboo with the sword and stuff. Like, it was just really cool, and it all came back to me. It's like, why is this episode so good? And I look who directed it. Dave Filoni. The guy with the whole concept, the guy that came up with the whole Clone Wars thing, which is why Ahsoka was in it. It just made all the sense in the world. Like, yeah, of course this is the best episode of the series, because the brainchild, the guy, you know, with George Lucas's actual blessing, is the one that did this episode.
And on one hand, we complain about, like, too much fan service and too many callbacks. And on the other hand, it's odd to see new characters and new things when the two are mixed together. And that's where the series really fucked up, in my opinion, is that the 50s thing, or the mod squad, wouldn't have looked as out of place if it weren't in Tatooine. And the random cowboy hat wearing guy wouldn't have looked so out of place if he weren't presented in a scene in a place that we are familiar with, and we know what, like, the dress there looks like.
Right, and we've seen 5 episodes of it not being intensely Western, and suddenly it's like, oh, okay, this is, like, you know, high noon suddenly.
The show ended on a...
Note. It ended on a note.
Yeah, like, it ended on a, this is over. So I don't really have... That's my assessment for the show. It left with such a, like, a... It came in and it left as, like, a wet fart, almost. It was just like, all right.
I think they don't know what they want to do next, and I think that's why they left it open. They could have them stay and do the crime lord thing, or... He could, I guess, have the mods take over and all the citizens of Tatooine agree to be ruled over by these teenagers, which I guess that's its own set of issues. But they could, in theory, have him and Fennec go off and do adventures. And I bet that they're waiting to see how well this was received. They want to get ratings back. They want to see, well, do people want to see them stay on Tatooine? Or they want to see Boba Fett, you know, maybe go back to bounty hunting. I feel like they left their options open at the end.
And on that note, let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. I wish you guys would have told me that the Breaking Balls curse applies to the callers as well as you guys, because I thought it was just you guys. But I really shot myself in the foot twice, because I figured I was shooting myself in the foot when I said, when I, like, called in and went on a tirade about the city of Cincinnati after, because, yeah, now the Bengals beat the Chiefs. And secondly, I did not expect to shoot myself in the foot by crying about the overtime rules, since the Chiefs then won the coin toss and Mahomes threw an interception in overtime. And the thing is, I was right about the Skyline Chili, though, because I don't know if it's good. I've never tried it, but an entire city thinks it's the best thing ever created, and it's not even chili. It's like some liquid beans or whatever with a bunch of cheese on top of it. Like, I'm sure it's good. I mean, I imagine the whole region wouldn't just be obsessed with it if it wasn't, but it's like the New York versus Chicago pizza debate. Like, New York pizza is better, just putting that out there. But also, like, Chicago, they say their casserole, they make a casserole and then call it pizza. It doesn't make sense. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that. And also, the worst part is now I have to cheer for the Bengals, because I would actually rather shoot myself in the foot twice than see the Rams win the Super Bowl. So, and also the MLB players met yesterday and apparently nothing got done, so that's not too promising.
You know, I've been hearing a lot about the Skyline Chili lately, obviously, I guess because the Bengals are in the Super Bowl, and I Googled it before, Quinn, when we were listening to your voicemail, and I still didn't get the description of it because I couldn't get past the news headlines that Cincinnati fans have been shotgunning cans of Skyline Chili, which sounds fucking disgusting no matter what it is, but when you describe it as wet beans or whatever it was, I'm like vomiting in my mouth.
When they say cans of it, is it like, is it just the component of the chili that comes in cans? Or is it one of those things where, like, you know, they'll do like a Thanksgiving dinner in a can. So like they put like the spaghetti and the beans and the cheese like all in a can and you just pop it and go for it.
Why? There's spaghetti in the Skyline Chili?
Oh, you don't remember the whole Skyline Chili thing?
No.
Oh yeah, dude. It's, if I'm remembering this correctly, it's on like a bed of spaghetti essentially. And it's like this bean heavy chili they plop on top and absolutely douse it with shredded cheese. And I might be forgetting another thing. They highlighted it on a Mets broadcast when they went to Cincinnati and they got it. And like, it was, I think like Gary refused to eat it. It was pretty gnarly.
Ugh.
Yeah. As Midwest delicacies, man. Two quick things. You want to talk about the breaking balls curse? How about recording on a Wednesday night when we know that the commissioner is about to practically cancel spring training tomorrow? Nothing we could do about it. It's part of our existence, Quinn.
Let's hope the curse works and reverses it, and he's like, baseball's back on, everybody!
Oh my god. We would have to do another episode tomorrow if that's the case and ruin DJ Bidgington's weekend. The other thing, buddy, just remember, it's nothing against the Chiefs personally. I don't care about the Chiefs. They've been to the last two Super Bowls in a row. Let's get some new blood in there. I want to see something else. That's really all it is.
And Chicago's pizza is a fucking casserole. That's not pizza. I'm sorry. If you have to eat it with a fork and a knife, it's not pizza.
Anytime somebody brings up and they say, well, you know, the Chicago versus New York pizza debate, I always stop them right there because it's not a debate.
No. The only people that debate that live in Chicago, okay? We know what's up. We don't even entertain that shit.
That is correct.
That is correct.
Quinn, thank you for your call. Our next call is from Danny B.
Hi, guys. It's Danny B from Manchester, England. Would you rather have arms where your legs are or legs where your arms are? And if you can both please give your reasoning. Thank you.
Now, I'm going to assume this is under the guise that the other limbs are still there, right? Like, if I have arms where my legs are, my other arms are still in the spot that they're
in? It's got to be, because otherwise both scenarios are the same. It's just asking, would you want to switch? So it's got to be, would you rather have four arms or four legs?
Four arms, hands down. No pun intended. But I would much rather. I have very good hand-eye coordination, and I have thumbs on my hands, so I'm going to go with the things that can do things.
It's all summed up in two words. Opposable thumbs. Now, yes, I understand the appeal of having four sets of legs and being able to run faster than Usain Bolt, but can you imagine doing every other facet of your life with two feet sticking out of your torso? Literally, anything else is made worse except for running.
And also, like, the two legs I have now are not very fast, so why do I think that two more would necessarily propel me forward that much faster? I feel like it would just be a weird-looking slow version of me.
Do my torso knees, like, share the same, like, knee pain that I have in my regular knees? Because then I'm definitely not interested.
Danny B., thank you so much for your question. Our next call is from James.
Emily John, it's your boy James. Few quick things. Number one, love your review with Boba Fett. You know, love that. Boba Fett's one of my favorites. Glad you guys are giving it the proper review and justice it does. Number two, I think Manfred's going to announce that it's going to be delayed in spring training. So let me ask y'all a question. How much of a joke this is between the players and owners? I know it's easy to side with the players. But how much of a joke on both sides that no one can agree to a deal and it seems like we're probably going to have a 100-game season? So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
The only problem, James, with the both sides thing, well, it's not the only problem, but a big problem with that is, as we mentioned earlier, the players are at the negotiating table. They are submitting proposals. They are conceding certain things. The owners are not showing up to the negotiation table. They haven't conceded a single thing. They have made it very clear that they're not interested in negotiating in good faith. They drag their feet. They do the dog and pony show for the press to try to get the fans and public opinion to turn on the players in order to get them to break. And I think that our language matters, that I can understand being frustrated. I'm frustrated. John is frustrated. We all want baseball back. We all want it back now. But
excuse me, if I could speak for myself here, I'm frustrated.
And I get it, but it's just, this is how it has to be, because this isn't millionaires and billionaires. And even if it were, there is a very large difference between those two things. And the players are the ones who want to play. They want to get out there. They want to get this done and over with. The owners are the ones who are putting everything on pause. They lock the players out. They are not meeting at the negotiating table. And they've made it clear that they don't really have any interest in doing so. I mean, they're going to meet this weekend, but I would be willing to bet that it's not going to last more than an hour. They've been fucking storming out of meetings when the players aren't just like, thank you, sir, may I have another?
And, you know, it just occurred to me, it's probably not too much of a stretch, for, especially for some of these shitty small market owners who lie about, you know, well, we don't make money when we do play, so what's the point? We might as well not play.
And speaking of that, so today there was a tweet by Greg Harvey. He's a great account. His ad on Twitter is at Between the Numbs. He has these awesome like moving graphs. And the one that he tweeted today was how much teams have spent on salary over the last 20 years. Well, it was from 2000 to 2020. And that got me thinking. So I wanted to look up, okay, let me see what they've made in revenue. Now, those exact numbers aren't public, but there's a few websites that are able to make some assumptions. I didn't read the fine print, but basically since 2000, they've made $127 billion with a B. In
not,
that same
not
time
billion
frame,
with an M, billion no. with a B.
Yes. Hey, just in case, you know, B, M could sound the same over the radio. In that same time frame, the teams have spent $62 billion on salaries. That is approximately 48% of the revenue share. The players just want 50-50 revenue share. So this is what we're talking about here. Billionaires who own the team, mind you, for that entire time. Very few teams are bought and sold in these leagues. We see it every now and then, but the same families, the same businesses are owning these teams over that stretch where players are being churned in and out. They only have a very finite window to make money. So with that being said, they're not asking for much. They're asking for 2% of that. And it's very funny when the fans are always like, oh, you know, the players are greedy. How are they greedy when we're talking about billionaires with a B that will not concede 2% just to get the game back and make fans happy? It's not the players that are making this as difficult as possible.
Because when you're a normal person, it requires a little bit of abstract thinking to put yourself in that situation and try and think of it like that. And a lot of people aren't able to do that. You know, they see there's people with a lot more money than me and a people with a crazy more amount of money than me arguing. And so they're all bad guys because they all have more money than me. It's like, well, yeah, but you want the game to happen, right? So like you can't have it both ways. It's just, you know what? I'm just going to direct everybody back to that Disha article because, again, she calls it out exactly like that. That's what it comes down to. The players are not asking for much, and the owners won't even give them that. End of story. That's it.
And as much as people don't like to think of it this way, the players are part of the workforce, just like we are. Sure, they're at the... A lot of them are at a different end of the scale in terms of the money that they're able to make, but our society has decided that these skills are worth a lot of money. So with that being the way it is, if the workers among us who our economy have deemed the most valuable in their skills don't have any leverage to make money in a business that is churning money like this, there is no fucking hope for the rest of us who are replaceable. And I hate to put it that way. I'm sure everyone listening is good at their job and is liked at their job. But if you didn't want to fucking work and you tried to, you know, dig your heels in, you would be replaced tomorrow. So if these guys can't fucking get it done, we're all fucked. So support the players because it trickles down.
All I have to say is that statistically speaking, there must be one of our listeners who's just bad at their job, right? It's got to be someone. I'm sure it's not
us.
You. I'm sure it's not you, whoever is listening right now. But one of you. It's got to be, right?
James, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Nick.
DJ Bennington, feel better. That's most important. We got Bengals, Rams, Super Bowl. Super Bowls are weird, you know, especially the first quarter. They never play like a real football game. Then after that, it normally gets into the swing of things. But I say Bengals 27, Rams 17. I think Stafford will throw an interception. Joe Burrow will throw two. But OBJ will rack off and underperform just like he did in his only playoff game against the Packers with the Giants. How do you guys feel about Eric Kay and Tyler Skaggs? Like, I'm pretty sure they'll try to kill Skaggs' reputation. I say the man's dead, let him lie, but that's what I think people are going to try to do. Addiction is addiction at the end of the day. Yes, Skaggs can't go without blame, but like they should let that part of it go and not try to blame Skaggs. What do you think about that? Obviously, we're not having baseball on time. So when do you think we'll get good news? You know, pitchers and catchers is supposed to report next week. That's probably not going to happen. And later.
That is a bold prediction, to be sure, Nick. I got to be honest. I got the Rams in this one. I'm terrible at predicting scores, so I'm not going to do it. I don't have any boxes. So, but yeah, no, I think Joe Burrow is going to stick around for a while. I don't think he wins this one. I think that we see him in a Super Bowl again within the next 4 or 5 years. But yeah, I'm going to say the Rams take this one pretty convincingly. I think it's Stafford's time. I like McVay. I got a feeling.
And as far as the Tyler Skaggs situation is, I agree with you. I think that they are going to try to make him out to be some sort of like, you know, scummy drug guy. And that's always how it is, because our country would rather pretend that only like morally repugnant people do drugs instead of facing the fact that a lot of people that you know are probably taking the same drugs that these guys take, and a lot more players are probably taking them and addicted to them than the league lets on, which the league says that no one is, and that's why they're going to, surprise, surprise, try to make an example out of this situation, out of a horrible tragedy, because this guy was suffering in silence. Because get out there and play. You can't be hurt. You got to get out there. So this whole culture cultivates these things, and he's probably been prescribed pain pills since he was a kid to get over some of the injuries that he had so he could keep playing. So it all feeds into this, and people are so disingenuous with these conversations. You know what I mean? Like, and that's all I say. I was going to go further, well, but that's, you know.
Not just to add very briefly, and you saw they already got their backup scapegoat lined up with Matt Harvey. So yeah. They're like, oh, well, Matt Harvey apparently sold him Percocet. But let's ask an important question. Did they find Percocet in the system? No.
And they're friends. Like, they make it out to be like an after-school special. Like, Eric Kay and, you know, now Matt Harvey are like in a fucking dark parking garage. And Mark, Tyler Skaggs is meeting
Matt Harvey
there.
Comes up in a trench coat.
And my prediction for the Super Bowl is I just hope everybody has fun. Nick, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Dave.
Hey, Emma John, it's Dave. How's it going? I'm calling before the Manfred press conference. I probably should wait, but I don't know. I get weird with time. It's already 3 p.m. here on a Wednesday. Anyway, how you guys are doing? I watched the Boba Fett finale. More fan service. I don't know what's going on with Star Wars. What are your thoughts on that? Are we ever going to actually get any new Star Wars characters at some point that are actually not in between or prequels? That's what I'm wondering. Also, are we going to have baseball? It doesn't feel like we're going to have baseball. So maybe we should have like a breaking balls contest of pick the date of opening day. I will go with May 15th. Also, if we don't have baseball, maybe we can pivot to a USFL sort of click, because why the fuck not, right? I got the New Jersey Generals, and we can just all pick teams on the USFL and then just be crazy crackheads about that, because what the fuck else are we going to do in the spring? Anyway, I hope you get baseball. I love you guys. I like everything you tweet. And, oh, yeah, Blocky recommended that you guys listen to Sammy Hagar Van Halen, because that's his favorite. His favorite song is the same favorite song as Fleetwood Mac, which is Dreams. Both bands, same song. Really weird. Anyway, love you guys. Take care. Bye.
Wait, we should watch the who, when? The U.S. what?
The U.S. Football League. It's a secondary football league, which we're not doing because we're going to watch minor league baseball. We talked about this.
David, you know goddamn well I'm not watching any soccer, because if I'm not watching the MLS, I'm not watching like the MLS Junior or whatever that is.
No, like football.
Oh, it is football?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Another football league?
Yeah, it's like arena football, like that level.
David, You know goddamn well I'm not watching regular football because I don't even watch NFL, so I'm not watching some junior NFL. And my prediction for when baseball starts, I'll say April 21st. I'll be a little generous with that.
And I will say that Van Hagar sucks, David Lee Roth forever.
Dave, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Ken.
This is Ken Childs. At the Ken Childs. We're going to talk about Olympics for a quick minute. Screw the Russians. There, I said it, not the hardest stakes, but you're still testing positive. You got all sorts of athletes competing this year at the Olympics that weren't allowed to compete in the 2018 Olympics from doping, and now they're still doping. So, screw the Russians. That's about all I have to say about that, but it needs to be said over and over. So, once again, screw the Russians. Thank you for your time.
I agree. Screw the Russians. But also, what a fucking ridiculous punishment they have. Like, if you're going to punish them, like, they're not allowed to compete under Russia, but there's still a bunch of Russian athletes, and they're competing, like, Russia Olympic Committee.
Russian colors, not for nothing.
If you're going to punish them, don't let any of them compete. But we all know that it's a show. It's just to say that they're doing something, but the reality is Russia, Canada, the United States have the Olympics by the balls, because if one of those countries doesn't participate, that's like a third of all the viewers.
Listen, man, we're the Winter Olympics. No one gives a crap about us. The Miracle on Ice franchise keeps the lights on in this place.
Hey, man, we complain about the MLB being corrupt. May I introduce you to the IOC?
Ken, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Block.
Hello, this is Gary Sanchez. I'd like to order 17 large pizzas. I'm sorry, it's the wrong number. Hey, it's Block. Good morning to you guys. Good afternoon. It's 9:30, West Coast time. Hey, since we got nothing to talk about, let's talk about how badass curling is. Is there, like, anything better than curling? Jen's getting sick of me drinking beer, eating peanuts, and watching curling. And I appreciate it when they try to explain curling to me. I don't want to know how the fuck curling works. I just want to watch the paunchy dudes throw the big chunks of granite down the thing of ice, and then the other paunchy dude sweeping the ice to make it go faster or slower, or maybe it makes it bend. Again, I can't reiterate how little I want to know how it works. I just want to see the blocks of granite clank against each other, and then the Russian guy cry because Sweden beat him again. All my love. Here's hoping the lockout ends soon and the Red Sox can once again dominate the AL East.
Block, for once, I agree with you. I love curling, first of all. I participated in it in a league a few years ago, and it was fucking awesome. Highly, highly suggest to anyone who lives near a curling club to look into it. It's really fun. And also, one of the things I love most about the Winter Olympics is that I don't really know the rules to any of these things. And I like just kind of making things up and trying to guess what the fucking rules are, and it's a lot of fun. But that's not the only thing I love about these Olympics. So much so that I'm willing to say that I kind of love them more than the Summer Olympics. And much to that end, I'm going to prove it, and so is John, with a top six of the reasons we love the Winter Olympics better than the Summer Olympics.
Now, full disclosure, I'm not sure that I love the Winter Olympics more than the Summer Olympics, but
the jury's still out.
But I'm on this ride. I'm always down for a little devil's advocate, little thought experiment. Let's go. I think there's an argument to be made, but it was not as black and white for me.
And also, to be fair, it originally was written as the reasons that the Winter Olympics are better than the summer, and I misworded it when I just introduced it as love, because I got a little wrapped up in loving curling and loving making up my own rules to winter sports. John, do you want to kick us off with number six?
I am going to kick us off with number six, and it's pretty straightforward. We're not reinventing the wheel here, people. Curling is number six.
Yeah.
It's better than the Summer Olympics because Summer Olympics doesn't have curling.
The number five reason that the Winter Olympics are superior to the summer is I feel that there are far more bozos competing in the Winter Olympics, in that every...
the bozo to non-bozo ratio.
Every Winter Olympics so far that I've paid attention to, which is exactly the last two, there's been someone who competes for like a country like Malta, an American that will compete for Malta because, you know, their great grandmother was from there. And they don't actually compete at this level, though, in whatever discipline they've chosen. The one I'm thinking of this year was a woman who participated in the half pipe snowboarding. She couldn't do a single trick. It was a horrible routine, but now she can at least just say that she's an Olympian. So I kind of like the aspect of the British announcers also being like, wow, oh no, that was not good. No, she's not doing anything out there.
Oh, because the British accent is just so judgmental. It really works. All right, so the number four reason that the Winter Olympics are superior to the Summer Olympics. So think about your viewing experience, right? Because it's in two extreme temperatures. You're watching the Summer Olympics, it's hot as hell outside, you're sitting in the air conditioning, right? Winter Olympics are the opposite. It's freezing outside, so you're sitting inside nice and cozy with the heat. I'll take the latter every time. Give me the heat over the AC.
Not to mention the guilt of, like, sitting inside during the summer watching TV. Like, there's always, like, that feeling right, of, like, Should I be doing something else right now?
It's like all these people being active outside. And with the Winter Olympics, it's like as soon as they're done, they're doing what I'm doing right now. Warming up and chilling.
The number three reason that the Winter Olympics are superior to the summer is the fact that it seems far more amateurish than the summer. And that's probably because of my perspective as an American or a North American sports fan, where there's a lot more recognizable sports in the Summer Olympics, as far as I'm concerned. I didn't grow up skiing or snowboarding, and I didn't grow up in an area where there's a ton of that going on. I grew up on a fucking flat island. So no one, these are all foreign to me, these sports, and I don't know any of them. And it makes me feel like I can participate because I'm seeing them in snowsuits. I'm not seeing their physiques like we do in the summer, which makes them seem godly and what they do unattainable. Because these people look normal and because I don't know these sports, I could easily beat these trained professionals.
Which is so funny because you specifically have had the experience of finding out that curling is a lot harder than it looks on TV. But hope springs eternal. All right, so the number two reason that, oh, I'm sorry, hope winters eternal? Anyway, aww. The number two reason, okay. The number two reason that the Winter Olympics are better than the Summer Olympics. So I don't like blanket statements. Actually, that's a blanket statement about blanket statements. Not to make a blanket statement about blanket. I'm wasting time here. So I am going to make a blanket statement. Sports where it's judged suck. They're by and large inferior to sports with scoring or, you know, whoever's faster or does something totally first, whatever. That said, it's honestly, it's one of the big downsides of the Olympics is the amount of what comes down to judges. And it's also part of why it's so corrupt. You know, you look at like a sport like boxing, you know, boxing is so corrupt because it comes down to judges. So many into the Olympics is judging. Now, if we're going to take that, okay, I have to deal with these judged sports, the big ones, if I'm comparing them the two, I will watch figure skating over gymnastics every time. I think of those two as the two like really big judged sports. So I'm going to take the Winter Olympics because it has figure skating, which I don't know if you saw that Nathan Chen short program. It was nuts, dude. The way this guy moves is just it's super cool to watch. Like just that. I don't know. I know that both are like insanely athletic, but there's something about the gracefulness and just the gliding around on the ice. It's satisfying to watch. It just is. So give me the Winter Olympics for that.
And I think it has to do with the fact that they're on fucking ice. That, like, even though I could never do anything that any of the gymnasts do on any level, but because it's on foot, it seems more accessible. Whereas when this shit's done on ice, I can't do gymnastics with bare feet, let alone putting on a fucking pair of ice skates and then going out there and doing, like, triple Lutzes. And the Russian girl did that quadruple Lutz or something the other day. Like, insane shit. But the number one reason that the Winter Olympics are far superior to the summer, it's not baseball season. Winter Olympics don't have to compete with baseball.
Yeah, what I else barely you watched. Right now?
Exactly. I barely watched the Tokyo Olympics last summer because it was baseball season. What the fuck am I going to watch, you know, judo, Olympic wrestling, or the Yankees take on the Blue Jays? Where now my options are, am I going to watch the snowboarding halfpipe, or am I going to watch the show I've seen 50 times on Netflix?
I thought you were going to lean into the, am I going to watch the snowboarding halfpipe, or the snowboarding big air, or the snowboarding giant slalom, or the snowboarding snowcross, or the extra spicy crunchy nacho cheese?
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are amazing. And of course, our callers. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun? Feeling brassy? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ Bingington. And we will catch you guys next week.